I'm going to take you north for this final presentation, so thank you for sticking with us to the end. This is part of my master's work, optimizing yield and forage quality of semi-annual grass legume mixtures in the Northeast. So first, I just want to talk. I realize a lot of people aren't in the Northeast, so where do semi-annuals fit in? Maybe they fit in for you at home. Talk about my experimental setup, some previous findings from my master's work, and then look at the forage quality results. So semi-annual forages, I like to think of them as safe because they offer a lot of flexibility in cropping systems for farmers. And there are three scenarios that I think about. The first one is a failed cropping system where you try and get something in May, it doesn't work. By June, you're looking at crop failure. There is time to plant a summer annual forage there. Double cropping, this has become more popular in the Northeast, where you're planting a winter annual and also a summer annual. So you're planting triticale or cereal rye, maybe even some winter wheat, and you're getting a forage harvest off of that, and then you're keeping your soil covered the entire time, which is an exciting proposition. And then finally, a winter grain, so you're waiting until mid-July, end of July for wheat to finish up, and then you can get a semi-annual one for a shorter amount of time. So the species that I chose were drought tolerant, they were fast growing species, and they required fewer inputs than corn silage, which is great if you've already spent your resources trying to plant something and it didn't work. And so this experiment looks at monocultures of semi-annual forages, but also mixtures. And the hypothesis just in general is that mixtures will improve yield and also forage quality. So we have four species. There are two grasses and two legumes, and in each of them there is a short species and a tall species. And so for the short species, we have a short grass, we have hybrid pearl millet, abbreviated with an M. For the tall, we have sorghum Sijian grass, which is a BMR variety, abbreviated with an S. And for the two legumes, we have cowpea as the short legume, abbreviated with a C, and sun hemp, abbreviated with an H. That's Crotalaria genetica. It's native to India, and it's used as a food, feed, and fiber crop there. And so for this experiment, we had seven different site years. We had one right on Lake Champlain, pretty close to Canada, so way far north, Aurora, New York, which is outside of Cornell, and then Beltsville, Maryland, USDA headquarters down there. And we applied 35 kilograms per hectare of total nitrogen in the form of poultry litter, and we harvested about 45 days after planting. And so for the treatments, we have the four species in monoculture, and this is their monoculture seeding rates. And we also have the seed cost over here. So you can see there's a pretty big difference between millet and everything else. And we looked at the combination of three species mixtures and one possible combination of the four species mixtures. We planted the mixtures in a replacement design. So for three species in a mixture, we're seeding at one-third of the monoculture rate for each of those species, and for the four species mixture, a fourth of the monoculture rate for that species. And for our biomass collection, we just laid down a quadrat. We put 10 centimeters above soil surface. And so some previous findings. This is the result I'm presenting. It's pretty exciting because it's the last of the trilogy. It's the final saga of the thesis. There's a paper out in Crop Science where we do a lot of competition indices. We look at several different metrics, and we found that Grass legume mixtures have greater yield stability across site years. Mixtures themselves exhibited relative over-yielding compared with monoculture. And then finally, crops with similar growth rates do better in mixtures. And then we have a weed science paper that came out this summer, and there was one main takeaway there. In these summer annual forage systems, crop biomass is the main driver of weed suppression, not necessarily species richness. So, now to the forage quality. We looked at yield, crude protein, using a LECO machine. We sent that off to a lab. I was working in Jerry Turney's lab to do the fiber analysis. We used an ANCOM system. And for in vitro digestibility, we used a 30-hour incubation. And then we put these basic parameters into the milk model 2016 that came out of Wisconsin. We got the relative forage quality, the milk that would be produced, and something I call the milk production efficiency, which takes into account the seed cost. And so now I'm going to show you a lot of bar graphs that are all set up very similarly. So on the y-axis, we have the response variable. And then on the x-axis, we have the two grass monocultures, so millet, sorghum, sijan grass, the two legumes in monoculture, cowpea and sun hemp, then the three species mixtures, and then the one forest species mixtures. So what we saw was that legumes had lower yields. That's not terribly surprising. And the grasses and the mixtures behave similarly. And that's largely because most of the biomass in the mixtures were the grasses. So they were accounting for most of that biomass. Moving on to crude protein, we saw the inverse, where the legumes had a higher crude protein. Everything else was pretty similar. Then to neutral detergent fiber, so we saw that the grass monocultures had a higher NDF, legumes had lower NDF, and mixtures were somewhere in the middle. But, and I think this is the most interesting part regarding the mixtures, mixtures with two legumes had lower NDF than mixtures that had contained two different grasses. So then moving on to the digestibility, we saw lower digestibility in the legumes, particularly sun hemp. It had much lower digestibility. So 45 days after harvest, that might be too late to plant, too late to harvest to get some good digestibility there. Then going on to relative forage quality, it was pretty similar for all the treatments apart from cowpea, which was had higher relative forage quality, but again, it also had lower yield. So then when we look at milk production, the amount of milk produced per hectare of the forage, we see that grasses and mixtures produce similar amounts of milk, and that the legumes produce a lower amount. And then to look at milk production efficiency, which is the amount of milk produced per hectare divided by the seed cost per hectare, we see that inexpensive seed really drove up efficiency for the treatments. So millet like knocked this one out of the park for sure. And then the mixtures containing millet also did better for this metric. So just to finish up, in general, intercropping summer annual forages can buffer cropping systems. It against extreme weather events. It offers both absorptive, so that offers absorptive capacity for farmers to absorb risk onto their land if they're dealing with a really wet year, which we had in New York this year. We had double the amount of rain that we usually have. And last year, we had a really bad drought. We had a 100-year drought. So it was pretty variable up there. Semi-annual forages can offer flexibility in the cropping system in terms of adaptive capacity. So for farmers to say, like, we tried this, it didn't work, and now we have this backup plan, and we can do something else here quickly. I left out the last part of this bullet point. Grass-legging mixtures behave similarly both to one another and also to just grass monocultures in general. The ideal mixture, if I could choose one ideal mixture out there, it would have similar growth rates, similar seed costs, and again, similar management also, so you would get similar forage regrowth potentials there. And then sometimes it comes down to economics and where the money's at, and in which case I would just say plant millet. Plant millet. So I'd like to thank my lab and my advisor, Matt Ryan, and I will say, promise you all, there is a paper coming out soon at the end of the semester. So I'll take any questions that you may have now, but thank you for staying later than expected for this. Yeah, everything was still in a vegetative state. Yeah.
So it seems like a lot of your results were kind of affected by the fact that grasses pretty much outcompeted the legumes and the mixtures. Is that something that you think would be remedied if you had, like, if you bumped up the legume seed rate?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. Would it be better, would you see more competitive legumes if they had a higher seed rate? I think it would help, but your growth rates are still really, so you would have proportionally more legumes in the mix, but as far as growth rates go, the grasses still have that much faster growth rate. So, yeah. Oh, I should say, sun hemp did have a competitively fast growth rate. Yeah, in the back.
Did you apply the broiler litter across all trees, including legumes?
Yeah, we did. So, we applied 35 kilograms per hectare of total nitrogen, and what we did, so that's half the recommended amount for sorghum seed and grass. So what we did was we had this question and then we split the difference by saying, like, we'll just apply half of it.
Do you think that was if you knocked that out in the mixtures, do you think that would change your composition with your grass soil in the mixtures?
Well, I think it would again help a little bit, but I think the grasses would still be more competitive. I just think they would look crappier. Yeah.
I have just a comment, actually, to share an experience that we had in Georgia this year. I received a phone call from a producer, one of our best producers. He did not actually fertilize a mixture of millet, cowpea, and sun hemp. But he has a history of a lot of bulk litter in that particular feed.
Yeah.
Nitrates came back at like 14,000 parts per million. He had cows, or he had stalkers on it.
Wow.
Further analysis, they went out and did some botanical separations, and the millet, which I would have thought would have been the primary contributor to that, was low. It was only like about 2,500 or 3,000 parts per million. The cowpea was the primary contributor to those high nitrates. It had over 22,000 parts per million of nitrates.
So what you're saying is it might be a good thing that cowpea didn't grow so well in these these mixtures for the forages.
Perhaps, but it was just a real strange occurrence. I had never really expected the cow feed to have that high nitrate. So
yeah.
I think it might be because it was shaded out and maybe lower nitrate protective levels or something like that.
That's really interesting. I'll have to look into that. Yeah.
It sounded like after the crop failure that any of these summer adults, they come out all the time. Did you experience any issues at any of the years trying to plant them, or they actually did come out every single time and no problems, no weeds?
We were working on the research farm, so it's like a hypothetical crop failure. It wasn't, we didn't experience a crop failure. I mean, but yeah, if you're in a drought and then you say like, oh, you can do this as an alternative, but you're still also in a drought, then it may not make sense. But if you do get that rain that you had been holding out for, then I would say that would be a window of opportunity where you could get something in. Yeah.
What was your seeding date, and could you see a difference between sorghum Sudan and pearl millet if you changed that date?
Yeah. So the seeding date, we had a range across the 7 different site years. We planted some stuff at the end of June, so June 20th, and it went all the way to July 24th. And I'm not sure what would happen if you planted things differently. There was nothing that came up in those later seeding dates. There, I didn't see any like treatment differences in the grass monocultures. They still behave pretty similarly to when you planted it earlier. Yeah.
Thank you, speaker.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.